said.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. Right, we are back. This is Sportsaholics episode number 103. As we're recording, I don't know what 103 miles an hour or something. I don't know. We're in the hundreds now, so I'm kind of torn as if I switch back over and just start from 03, 04. But either way, we're back. It's been forever. Eric's not here. Eric is out on the road crushing it. From what I can tell through Facebook, traveling through the South, taking pictures of Confederate flags that are still flying in Georgia and Tennessee, places like that. Missouri, I was just there recently. I gotta say, Missouri, you know, a state that was split during the Civil War, a state that essentially started the Civil War with the Bush, with the raids on Kansas back and forth. A lot less, I did not see any, actually, Confederate flags. No longer is the Sons of the Confederacy billboard up on I-70. You know, so good for you for just seeing where things were socially, what's socially acceptable now. And I know for some of you, that's a hard pill to swallow in the South. But yeah, either way, kudos. But Eric sniffed out a few of them. But this episode right here is kind of going to be a mix of a little bit of this and that. I had Johnny LaQuasto on. A few weeks ago, came over to the studios, did some recording, and it was late night. He'd just gotten done doing a set. We sat down, primarily, you know, just talked a lot of football. You know, he's an East Coast Philadelphia guy, a correspondent for Whistle Sports. Just go to JLo, JLOComedy.com, and then on Twitter, at JQuasto, QUASTO. Just well-informed guy, but he's a huge Chiefs fan, football fan, so we had him on just talk about that and see, catch up with him. But guys, Midwest people, thank you for coming out. Topeka, Kansas City, Springfield, all great shows. Worked out a bunch of new material, which I desperately needed to do, which also reminds me, San Diego, Oceanside, Southern California, June 28th and 29th, it's a Friday and Saturday, I'll be performing with Rick Ingram and Brian Moses, two good friends of mine, two very, very funny comedians. We'll be at the La Jolla Comedy Store that weekend. And then also Thursday, June 9th, I'll be opening for Freddie Lockhart at the American Comedy Company, which is downtown in San Diego. So if you're in that area, Southern California people, by all means, please come out, see the show. You can also just go to J-O-N is here, John is here, comedy.com, find out more information. But enough about that. Want to talk about traveling. Went down to Springfield, and which is Cardinals Nation, and I get it. It's right on 44. It's a major interstate that kind of connects Tulsa, Springfield, Joplin, Missouri, you know, on up into St. Louis. You know, it's a pipeline, and the Royals haven't really done anything. And the Cardinals were the only team for decades, so generations and generations. So, relatively speaking, the Royals are the new kid on the block in Missouri and down in the Ozarks in that area. But, you know, obviously a lot of Cardinals fans. But now, I saw a lot of Kansas City stuff, and it made me happy because you're outnumbered 20, 30, 40 to 1 in Springfield, but now there's enough pride for Royals fans to actually wear their stuff proudly in Cardinals Nation. And I brought that up early on, you know, in my set, and it didn't go over too well. I just kind of tried to shit on Cardinals fans. I'll try to pull the audio from that if I can. No promises. But had a great time. The Blue Room in Springfield. Anyone listening in that area, go check it out. It's a brand new club, just opened up a couple months ago. great comics they bring in from all over the country, but I had a great time there. So thanks for that. And then I also want to say thank you to Austin Evan Wright out of Topeka. Great, very, very funny comic. Look him up on YouTube. And then Rashad Wright in Kansas City and Danny Boy in Kansas City. Great job. Great working with you guys. And if you're in that area, by all means, go support them. Very funny people. But I wanted to go see a AAA game, right, when I was down in Springfield. So I checked the schedule, everything, 7:10 start, gates open at 6:10. The comedy show's at 8 o'clock, 4 or 5 blocks away. So I'm like, perfect, go watch the first 2 innings and take off. Well, Missouri State's also in Springfield. And so as I'm walking up, there's a big Missouri State trailer. Again, not really thinking about it. Walk up, buy my ticket. And then I notice there's like cheerleaders around. And then I look down at my ticket and I just purchased a $5 ticket to go see Missouri State versus Illinois State in the regional, which I'm, you know, college baseball, I love it. But I was standing there like, I don't know if I want to really go in right now. And I'm looking at the ticket. It reads $5, you know, regional, like Missouri Valley regional, I believe. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you know what, I'll go check this out. And then I just hear a ping, 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 ping. I'm like, nope, I can't do it. I cannot do it. And then it got me thinking, like, as to why are we still using aluminum bats in college? I can understand, you know, high school, but we have made, like, the old thing was they cost a lot, you know, to replace. Well, last time I checked, universities had money to spend on flying players around here and there. We can't just afford wooden bats. I'm sure someone would gladly give them to you. So I just would, just putting this out there, NCAA, maybe it starts in the NAIA or one of the lower levels of college sports. Can we bring the wooden bat back? I mean, for one, I don't know why baseball professionally isn't kind of leaning towards this, because what a better way to, I don't know, assess talent than with an equal playing field as to what you're trying to produce on a professional level with the wooden bat. Like, that what do 56 home runs on an aluminum bat versus what does that translate to a wooden bat in college? Like 30? I mean, I'm sure they have some scale, but why not just say, hey, we don't need a scale anymore because everyone's playing with a wooden bat. And there's a safety issue there also. You know, the ball comes off, like, I'm sure, significantly faster off the aluminum bat. But just putting that out there, you know, that's something. Just start that conversation with people at the office or at the sports bar or on Twitter, whatever you want to do. Just put that out there. Be, hey, NCAA, can we get wooden bats now? We can afford it. I don't think, you know, I know everyone wants to go green, but I think in this situation, it's like a best of, you know, do we go green or do we save people's lives? You know, it's a balance of people that really want everything to be perfect. So I don't know. We got to meet in the middle somewhere. An aluminum wooden bat, possibly. Maybe that's something to think about. But just putting that out there. Start that conversation. Get some feedback. Let me know what people think. But so that was Springfield. Spent some time in Kansas City. Had a day off on Thursday. Went by the Negro Leagues Museum. And just incredible time. And look, it was school's out, summer kids are running around. So what I ended up doing was hitting the gift shop first and then mistakenly not buying my ticket at that point, which I guess would have been discounted. But guys, great. I got my Monarchs hat at the Negro League shop. So I felt like I'm contributing to them. Got a great, amazing Buck O'Neill CD that I'll play some clips of later. That was just fantastic. But, again, if you guys are in Kansas City, by all means, go down there. 18th and Vine, the Jazz Museum's right next to it. But just a collection of memorabilia, many stories, some videos, just a lot of everything. And so, actually, you know what? We'll start off with this. This first story, this is from, let me get the right name here. And again, if you're there, buy this. I bought this CD because I just want to. This is the best of Buck O'Neill, which is, he's like the godfather of baseball in Kansas City. He was around throughout the 30s, 40s. You know, first African American to coach for the Cubs, this story in particular is kind of like, this is when he coaches for the Cubs, but he's still, yeah, he's in the big leagues, but there's really no chance for him to kind of get past a bench coach, and how they kind of like stonewalled him even when coaches, you know, got thrown out. So it's kind of sad, but at the same time, he's completely accepting of it because he was, you know, had no rights or freedoms before that anyway. So he's like, you know what, screw it. I'm in the dugout. That's saying a lot. So, but anyway, this is a great clip with Denny Matthews and Buck O'Neill from that CD right here. Let's see if we can get this going here.
You coach in the big leagues, you coach with the Chicago Cubs, but you come very close to being named the first black manager in Major League Baseball. Tell me how that came about.
Well, and they actually, as far as see Mr. Wrigley, he wanted they had so much trouble in Chicago, everybody was getting on the newspaper, was getting on the managers. He said, well, and I'm going to have a coach's clinic, coach's council. That's what they called it. And so we had about 8 people there, but only 4 guys managed the ball club. The other coaches were there, and I was one of the coaches on there. But I never did manage the team, but I was on that list.
It was an experiment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an experiment, but it wasn't good because, you know, everybody got their own idea how they want to run a ball club. It wasn't good to the ball players because this guy wanted it this way, and he's there a month, and then another month you got to change everything. And no, it wasn't good, so it didn't last.
Did it bother you that you never got a crack at managing? I mean, you managed the Monarchs.
Well, and one thing about it is actually I never coached on the line. I was a bench coach, and Ernie Banks and all the guys, Santo and them, said, well, and one thing about it is Buck gonna run this team one of these days. We're in Houston just before they had the dome. That day, Lou Kline was managing. They put Lou Kline out of the ball game. Put Lou Kline out of the ball game, and then Vita Hemsel was coaching third base, so they had Vita Hemsel managing the ball club. They said, oh, Buck, gonna coach on the line now. Instead of me coaching on the line, they called Fred Martin from down in the bullpen to coach at third base to keep me. Know why they did it? Charlie Graham had told them, say, if you ever let Buck coach on third base, some of you are going to lose your job because he knows what he's doing down there. So don't let him get there. And I don't know that until Charlie Metro told me that after all of this thing was over.
So you never know. You could have had your shot.
No, he couldn't have had his shot. It was clearly, the guy was like, he's clearly able to, but let's just not put him up there, you know? So, I mean, look, I guess they just gotten at that point over the first, you know, civil rights hurdle in baseball. So maybe not ready to just throw him on the field straight away. But, you know, it was interesting being there with all the kids running around. There's like 5 through like 12-year-olds. But like there was a couple kids that were just like, where's the Jackie Robinson stuff? Where's the Jackie Robinson stuff? And it was real interesting because it dawned on me that, you know, in an era when I grew up with, you know, with Sandlot and, you know, the Babe Ruth, you know, Lou Gehrig and really Babe Ruth. That was the guy that was the legend. And now to see this new generation of kids that are growing up, that's now, I realize that's Jackie Robinson, and that no amount of home runs or RBIs, there's no stat that picks what he does. He changed the game entirely. And so just know that this next generation, like you grew up idolizing your DiMaggio's, maybe Nolan Ryan or whoever you think is the greatest, but just know that the generation of the from here on out, it's Jackie Robinson. There's no number 3, you know, is not retired anywhere in baseball except for, you know, in New York. And what I mean by that is 42, you can't put it on anywhere. And nobody else has that except for, you know, I guess Wayne Gretzky and then Jordan for some reason in, you know, North Carolina, I think. But all that aside, it's crazy to think about that. Just know that Jackie Robinson is the new Babe Ruth for this next generation. With that being said, here's a great clip from that same CD talking about Jackie.
Jackie Robinson makes history, breaks the color barrier in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
What did you think about that, and what did you think about Jackie Robinson when that all happened?
I tell you, see, Jackie played here in 1945 with the Monarchs. I'm in Southwest Pacific. I'm in the service at the time when Jackie was here. But Hilton Smith told me this one. See, Jackie was different than we were. See, we were acclimated to segregation, but not Jackie Robinson. We'd been going to a filling station in Oklahoma for 20 years. We'd never gone to the restroom because the sign on the door said, white men only. We played in that town. They played in that town that night. The next morning, they get up, go to the filling station. The man comes out, put the hose in the tank, say, you boys played a great game last night. You filled up the ballpark and put on a great show. Jackie gets off the bus and started to the restroom. The man said, boy, where you going? I'm going to the restroom. Boy, you know you can't go to that restroom. Jackie said, take the hose out of the tank. Now, the man thought, we got a 50-gallon tank on this side and a 50-gallon tank on that side. He's not going to sell that much gas to one customer until we got back there again. You know what he said? You boys go to the restroom, but don't stay long. See? But the gist of that story is this. From that day on, the Monarchs never got gas at the station. They couldn't go to the restroom. They never played in the town. Didn't have a place for them to sleep, a place for them to eat. Jackie said, this is a capitalistic society. You're making money for these people. You just don't have to put up with this. This is what Jackie did.
Isn't that great? I mean, even before he got to the big leagues, he was like, guys, you know, I grew up in California. It doesn't have to be like this. Trust me, in America, it's not like this everywhere else. And this is a great story here about the initial East-West game, which was the Negro Leagues All-Star game, and just how big of a deal that was.
It's the 1930s and 40s. The nation is segregated, and baseball is segregated. There's the major leagues, and there's the Negro baseball leagues.
Also,
as
I guess
history
this is
tells
the
us,
introduction
every bit
to
as
the
much
album.
The big
Again,
leagues.
Great album.
Just listen to Buck talk about it.
That was, oh, man, that was everything. It was like, I tell you, it was like going to a heavyweight fight. Everybody came. The Illinois Central put on extra cars coming out of New Orleans, coming to Chicago to the East-West game, picking up people in Memphis, Tennessee, all the way up to Chicago. The New York Central put on extra cars coming out of New York, coming from the East, coming to the East-West game in Chicago. Santa Fe Chief put on extra cars. They were coming all the way from California to this East-West game. Because this is the best in the Negro Leagues playing. Joe Louis would throw out the first pitch. I've seen him throw out the first pitch. Ethel Waters, I've seen her throw out the first pitch. Mm-hmm. Marva Lewis throw out the first pitch in the East-West game. This was, oh, man, everybody came. And we'd always play it, you know, right around at the end of the season. And the people would come into the big city to get their fall wardrobe and all that. Oh, man, it was outstanding. And all the big shops was there, all the nightclubs, all the musicians would be at this thing. Oh, quite a...
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like, for me, I just love hearing that. Because it sounds like it was just like they just invented the All-Star Game weekend. And everyone would go to Chicago with extra money and go buy all their winter clothes, come from all over. You had all the biggest musicians there. They're packing 80,000 people into the stands. And I think it was they're playing at Comiskey at the time. This is great. This is a great clip on Kansas City and New York back in, I believe, the 40s.
You are a beloved part of this city, or the country for that matter, because of your notoriety and your fame now, but certainly of Kansas City. What do you enjoy most about Kansas City? What does this city mean to you?
I love it. This is my kind of town, my town. You know what I mean? I know so many people here, and so many people know me. And Kansas City... I've seen it grow, and I've seen it change. Mm-hmm. I've seen it change, and it's actually going to get better. Yeah. And you can see that. And we've had good people running Kansas City. See, I knew President Truman. Yeah. Good man. One of our best presidents, really. Hmm? One of our best presidents because he was... Actually, I don't think he wasn't the smartest president we ever had. but he was one of the best presidents we ever had for this United States. Good man. Good man.
So it was like the original George W. Bush.
I met President Truman.
Apparently.
Did you ever figure out whether he threw left-handed or right-handed? Because every time he threw out the ball, each year he was president, he threw it out with a different arm.
Yeah, well, and one thing about it, he's ambidextrous.
All right. Obviously, Kansas City would have to be the best city you ever played in. But outside of Kansas City, what's the best city?
For me, it was New York City. Yankee Stadium. And not only Yankee Stadium, Harlem. Oh, man. I never seen that many people before.
By the way, watch Harlem Nights if you get a chance. Watch mm-hmm. that on Netflix.
In Harlem, and they had black businesses, and everything was jumping, really. And, oh, man, the first time I rode in a Rolls-Royce automobile, I rode from the ballpark from Yankee Stadium with Bojangles Robinson in his car. And I don't think I've ever been in a Rolls-Royce since. And I tell you what, Charlie Parker came to New York. They stayed at the same hotel, the Woodside Hotel that we stayed in. Uh-huh.
Is that where Count Basie, jumping at the Woodside? Is that
jumping at the Woodside, that's right.
Came from the Woodside Hotel.
Yeah, jumping at the Woodside, that was it.
I mean, that just sounds like just the best time in the, you know, Harlem. Just watch Harlem Nights. You got Eddie Murphy, you got Red Fox, you got, you know, Richard Pryor. Just, it's great. And okay, so again, this is the best of Buck O'Neill. If you're at the Negro Leagues Museum, pick up a copy. It's fantastic. Very informative. There's tons of history on here. I listened to it 3 times when I was driving all around the Midwest this weekend, just soaking it in. And one thing that I kind of was, well, it's, what's the best way to put this? I learned that apparently Oscar Charleston is just the greatest. It was like the pre-greatest, the Babe Ruth of the Negro Leagues in Babe Ruth's era. So here's Buck's opinion of Oscar Charleston.
You have said Willie Mays is the best major league player you've ever seen, but not the best ball player. Who was the best?
Oscar Charleston. Oscar Charleston played with the Indianapolis ABCs. Oscar Charleston could steal your 100 bases, hit your 50 home runs, and run that ball down. Great arm. He was everything. Great baseball player, Oscar Charleston. But, and this is what the old timers say, the closest thing to Oscar Charleston was Willie Mays.
Willie Mays, the greatest major league player. Could do it all.
He could beat you every way you could be beaten. You understand what I mean? Like DiMaggio going to beat you with that bat, man, and his fielding, too. He ain't going to beat you with his legs. You understand? And Ruth going to beat you with that home run or things like that, but that's the only way he's going to beat you. But Willie going to beat you any way you can be beaten.
Mm-hmm. Buck, from what they tell.
Yeah, so, again, fantastic. So go check it out if you're in Kansas City. Go to the Negro Leagues Museum. Just try to go when there's not a bunch of kids running around. And so at this point, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to attempt to call my buddy, who's a diehard Dallas Stars fan, and he is claiming to, he wanted to be on here. So we're going to see how this goes. We'll see how this, see if he answers. And he has no idea I'm calling, so bear with me if he does answer.
Please leave your message for 817-384-9550.
That's what I thought. So anyway, back to the trip. I'll try him back later. Went to the first Royals game of the year with a buddy of mine who hadn't been to Kauffman in a while. And so it was awesome. We just walked around. We sat down for one inning, went and visited Karen up in 427. If you're at Kauffman Stadium, by all means, go up to 427 Hy-Vee section. Just ask for Karen. She's the best usher I've ever met at Kauffman Stadium. Fun to be around. Very informative, very helpful. It was amazing. But the whole experience of that day was incredible. Get off my plane, take an Uber to Kauffman. I'm walking with my carry-on and my backpack. All of a sudden, an old college buddy drives by, Matt McLaughlin. Good to see you, buddy. Picks me up, drives me into the stadium. Walk up to the stadium with him and his buddy. Catch up for like 20 minutes. Then I bump into my buddy Richard, who's on the show Saturday night in Kansas City. He has an extra ticket, slides it through the fence, at which point I go meet up my buddy, leave my bags at his car, get a Miller Lite tall boy from the people next to him out in the parking lot. It was just, then they go in, they win the game. It was nice. Went and stood by the fountains, got the air blown everywhere. The rain. All right, I'm going to try him again real quick. The fountain rain. It's actually really sweet because it was kind of hot, so it was much needed. The only reason I'm blowing him up is because I'm really trying to annoy him. It's kind of like poking the beehive here.
Please leave your message for page 175.
He did just get run over by a car also, so that might have something to do with it. Guys, all right. I'm going to go to the, when we come back, we'll be with John LaQuasto. You can find him at jquasto.com, Whistle Sports correspondent. Also, or I'm sorry, at jquasto on Twitter, and then jlocomedy.com is the website, jlocomedy.com.
I'm going away, 'cause I got a busted heart. I'm leaving today. This old travelogue will start. I reckon where I'm going might need my different clothes. Way up in Michigan, where the laughing river flows. 20 years in the minor league.
All right, we are back and in studio. We have the number one Chiefs fan that I know, especially out here on the West Coast, John LaQuasto.
Man, that's an honor. I mean, we got Chris Porter.
Big Chiefs fan.
Yep, we got Rick Ingram.
Is a Chiefs fan. I wouldn't go as far as say big.
Okay.
But a Chiefs fan.
I will say this, though. I can't – our friend, also comic, Reggie Flannery – I gotta say he's a bigger Chiefs fan just because he's more knowledgeable. Like, that dude lives, breathes, and eats football. And whenever I have a Chiefs question, he's my goat. He's like my shaman.
See, and that's how I feel with you.
So
he's like one shaman ahead,
dude.
And look,
he's been to Tibet.
Facebook friends, Reggie and I. He's a good dude. And yes, I know he's a big Chiefs fan just from the type of stuff that he posts, you know, and it's like, oh, he cares about who the backup left tackle is going
to
be.
He designed a Chiefs t-shirt last year. If you're listening to this and you're a Kansas City fan, look up Reggie Flannery. If you have questions about the Chiefs, ask him. He is so knowledgeable about football and knows, like, throughout the entire draft, I was basically talking back and forth with him, like, what do you think about this guy?
Live tweeting?
No, we just text each other back and forth. I'd call him after each draft pick. And it was, he's super knowledgeable, and he's great to have as a friend and a fellow Arrowhead Prider.
Yeah, and you know what? At Reggie Comedy, Twitter, right there.
Boom.
R-E-G-G-I-E, comedy.
So knowledgeable.
And, yeah, and great dude. And I haven't seen the man in a long time. But, yeah, definitely. Right now I'm looking at his Twitter account. He's got this great picture of Lynn Dawson leading the huddle back in the Super Bowl right here.
It's funny, too, because, like, every week during the season, him and I always have, like, a Sunday night recap. We'll talk about stuff. And I remember last season when we were 1-5. You know, the roof had caved in. Jamal went down with an injury. Season was over.
That was the main thing. It was that injury because – it was just one of those things where we've been riding Jamal Charles for, 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah.
But people forget we rode, Larry Johnson before that, Priest Holmes.
What a horrible investment.
So it's obviously there's a system here in place, as far as, being able to produce from the running back position.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't shocked when we were able to fill that hole. Immediately.
Well, it's funny. They drafted Jamal in the third round. And I remember as Larry Johnson was starting to like fade into oblivion, I was like, good, let's get Jamal Charles some action, see if he's any good. Because I thought he was. Did I think he would become a, possible Hall of Famer? No.
Yeah. No, he's one of those weird guys where he's on that roster buried deep in that, I believe it was 2007 Rose Bowl, that Vince Young, Matt Leinart. You know, he's one of those guys that was on that team
yep.
that kind of ends up being the guy that, you know, that has the best career in the NFL from that game.
I don't know if he's ever going to have a Hall of Fame numbers because it took him a couple years to get playing time. He already has had virtually two full seasons wiped out due to ACL injuries. But as far as production goes, he's got Hall of Fame numbers. It all depends on how he finishes his career. How many more years does he play? Hopefully he stays healthy. But as far as production goes, he's a Hall of Fame type talent. But I remember we were 1-5. We were both depressed. We said, you know what? Let's toss it in. They gave up on Andy Reid. Let's just finish with a shitty record. Let's get a top draft pick. Fast forward a couple weeks. We win. We go 4-5. I remember talking to Reggie that night. I go, dude, call me crazy. I know we're only 4-5. I think we're going 11-5. He's like, don't say that. I said, dude, I think we're going 11-5. There's something about this team right now, and our schedule gets easier as the season goes on. I think we're going 11-5. And sure enough, Kansas City did, and then I flew to Houston on a whim for the playoff game. And
great call. Yeah. Great call on that. I remember being so actually disappointed that I couldn't fly to Houston and go to that game because it was really like
22 years. We've been waiting for a damn win.
And it was something this year. I mean, especially after the way we lost in, what was that, in 13?
Every other 14, time?
14, yeah.
Oh, with the Colts
one. Yeah, yeah.
The Colts. Alex Smith had a perfect quarterback rating, and the entire secondary decided to go to sleep in the second half.
It just reminded me when I was growing up, or well, I guess when we were growing up, and they would just go into that prevent defense and with like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and you're just like, we're only up 14.
The Elvis Gerbach era, where it didn't matter how good our record was, we weren't going to win.
Yeah, you're just like, come on, you know it's John Elway. Put 10 defensive backs out there. It's like, why is one guy standing in the end zone right now?
So dumb.
Yeah, so... Oh man, that just and then Marty. Now back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Now, did you have a go-to, or was there, or did you come in? Because you know, being from the East Coast.
Yep.
What age did you start in with the Chiefs?
Oh, we're going. Honestly, for me, it was a combination of things. Because growing up in Pennsylvania, everyone loves the Eagles.
Yes.
Now, look, I'm diehard Sixers, diehard Phillies. For some reason. Something with the Eagles didn't resonate with me. Maybe even as a young age, I realized Eagle fans were dicks. I don't know. But
a bad reputation, definitely. Yeah. Even in the 80s, like I remember as a kid, you know, in the 90s, like getting, you know, you'd hear stuff and then, you just Philly in general.
It was weird. And I remember in 89, they drafted Derek Thomas. Schottenheimer had those cool, like, Coke bottle glasses. Okoye was running with his shoulder pads through the league.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved the Arrowhead. And I was like, you know what? I like this team. I want to be a Chiefs fan. And I think part of the reason I'm so diehard now is because, like, I want to be able to, like, I feel like I have to prove myself because I didn't grow up in Kansas City. But, like, I'm authentic because I picked him as a kid, and I'm sticking with him no matter how shitty it's been. And so when that weekend came around for the wild card, it was one of those weekends where I had no shows. I wasn't leaving town.
God, it's such a great – right? Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt again.
No, not at all. So Friday night, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to Houston because I had a friend, one of my best buddies from high school lives in Houston.
So you got a place to stay.
I found a rent-a-car. I'm not even kidding. On Priceline, I got a rent-a-car for $8.
Wow.
20 with tax.
Holy crap.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to Houston. Screw this shit. I went to Houston and I got a ticket 45 minutes before kickoff. And I went and I ended up sitting in a sea of Texans fans who were very polite. And respectful. And, like, I wasn't a dick. I mean, from the opening kickoff when we return over a touchdown, and then we just started kicking the shit out of him, Brian Hoyer lost his mind. I started feeling bad for these poor Texans fans. And we all got along great. And they all congratulated me. And then the last 5 minutes of the game, the security stopped caring. So I saw there was a sea of Chiefs fans.
Now, what does that mean exactly? The security stops caring.
They didn't care where you went. And I saw there,
there
was a sea of Kansas City fans around the 50-yard line. I'm like, I'm going. And I got to watch the final 5 minutes of the game with a couple thousand Kansas City fans on the 50-yard line. And then we all celebrated afterwards. And it was really cool.
That's great. That's a common move at Royals games anywhere, really, where the fans gather around that side of the field dugout. Nice. So at that point, you're high-fiving people. You're mm-hmm. meeting people. Yep. Do you ever get asked, where are you from Kansas City? Where did you grow up in Kansas City?
Well, you know what's crazy, dude? I was talking to a lot of the Chiefs fans. A lot of them weren't from KC. They were from all over the country. The Chiefs fans travel well, I've noticed. Like, when it comes to road games, Kansas City has a strong following. And I met a lot of people that weren't even living in Kansas City. They were flying in from all over the country because they were just like me. They wanted to witness the first playoff victory since 93.
Yeah. That, I mean, it is still so. And then obviously, you know, the dream, we wake up and the dream ends, you know, the following week.
Which, you know, we gave him a run. Honestly, I think if Justin Houston and Macklin were healthy, I think we, and if Andy Reid knew how to manage a clock, which might never happen.
And if Kevin Love wasn't hurt last year, maybe we don't all have to listen to the thing, the Warriors. But either
way. Yeah.
But they're coming back. It's something to build on.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like we were talking earlier, this all started with the draft, you know, mm-hmm. which was a conservative, let's trade down. And I think, you know, that comes from they've got weapons. They've got a system. And so I think when you have that, it allows you that luxury of saying, really, we can find way more value in just getting two guys with this one mm-hmm. just to trade down. And, yeah, they didn't get Paxton. Is that without the guy's name from
Memphis? Yeah, apparently they – rumor mill is that they wanted to get Paxton Lynch, the quarterback – But Denver ended up snagging him. So now it's, you know, him and Mark Sanchez are going to be, I guess, fighting it out maybe.
But I'm not worried about that because the Chiefs have never been the we're going to draft the quarterback franchise.
No.
They've never been that way. They're always the we're going to take the 49ers sloppy seconds franchise. That's just how.
But don't be surprised in the next couple of years if they start looking for a quarterback. Because Alex Smith, luckily, he's not a brat like Sam Bradford. Alex Smith is a professional and understands that he's not going to play forever.
Right, and he also understands that the offense is built perfectly for his limitations.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, in the grand scheme of, let's say, offenses compared to cars, he's just got a very nice conservative Prius. Gets great gas mileage. For the most part,
he's quicker than a Prius, though.
Okay.
Honestly, when it comes
Honda Accord Sport Package,
he's underrated. A lot of people, I think he's usually third or fourth in the league in rushing yards for a quarterback.
Dude, he will bust off one of those 40 yards, you know, sprints where he's like, "Hey, the middle of the field's open.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go for it."
If you look at his stats, he's in the top five of rushing yards for quarterbacks every season. But you know, it goes under the radar a little bit. Like he's really good at getting away from pressure.
Okay, I'm trying to pull up the draft list here.
I got one for you.
Okay. So.
So yeah, here's the deal. Chiefs wanted a corner, which we needed one. Unfortunately, five corners went in the first 20 some picks, which was really surprising. So, in my opinion, intelligently they traded down because we lost the third round pick because of the whole Macklin tampering BS.
Oh yeah. So that was their attempt to kind of plug that hole.
Yep. So we drafted Chris Jones. 6'6", 310 pounds. He's going to jump right into the defensive rotation with Dontari Poe, Alan Bailey, and Jay Howard. But he was invited as one of the top 25 players to go to the draft. So that shows you that he's a first-round talent, dropped to 37. And there's a chance, you know, Dontari Poe might leave after next season, free agency.
He's still learning how to play football, really. I mean, and stay healthy. That's a big concern.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully he doesn't leave Kansas City, but you never know. So this guy,
That's good. Good pick.
Yeah, he's very confident.
Precautionary, you know, covering their ass next season possibly.
Yep, he's big. He's explosive. He has good footwork. He used to be a basketball player. And they're going to, you know, he's not going to start right away, but he's going to be in the major rotation. He's going to play plenty. Then their second pick, it was in the third round, Kavari Russell out of Notre Dame. The dude is a gamer, 3-year starter at Notre Dame, and they're saying he's going to compete to be the third corner. You got Marcus Peters, and then a lot of people forget Philip Gaines is a guy they got the year before, injured himself, was out all last year, but they had high hopes for him as a corner. So right now,
So he was like a second or third round pick last year?
Yeah, I remember him being pretty high. I forget exactly where.
So nice. So just assume that add him into like as a kind of like a second round pick. This mm-hmm. year, just because he didn't play at all.
Yeah, they have high hopes for him. He played a little bit. He had six tackles, but he got hurt. But they have high hopes for him. And so as of now, he's going into the season as a second corner. And then they're hoping Kavari Russell, you know, could be the guy that can maybe be a nickel or, you know, he's a good tackler, does some frustrating things here and there, but he played a lot at Notre Dame. And obviously Notre Dame played the best teams in the country for the most part.
Yeah.
He hurt himself, but they say he's super healthy and will be ready to go when the season starts. So
then they got alignment, some more defensive backs, a little bit of controversy with the, I'm going to look it up before I just slander DeMarcus Robinson to see.
But, oh, no, no. The guard they took, Parker Ehringer, I don't know how to say it. He's going to actually play as a guard. He'll just be guard depth. He's probably not going to start, but he'll be able to actually play and be decent. So, you know, solid pick. The next dude was Eric Murray in the fourth round. Corner is where they were thin. So they took this dude. I honestly don't know if he's going to play a whole lot. Other than that, you know, special teams if he makes the team, this guy. So DeMarcus Robinson's a dude from Florida. Some people claim it's a risky pick. A lot of people think he's a first-round talent, but he's had some issues. He went to rehab for drug abuse as a freshman, but he's been clean ever since, and so he says he's put it all behind him and he's ready to go. And he'll compete for playing time. They got Chris Conley and Albert Wilson, and this dude's 6'1", 204. So he may have the talent to actually play for them, like a decent amount.
Actually kind of break through.
Well, yeah, because beyond Macklin, now granted, this is the best collection of receivers the Chiefs have had in our lifetime, which doesn't say much for the Chiefs receivers over the years.
We never have. I mean, what's the thing? Like, okay, you know, obviously Green Bay, that's a horrible example because they've actually had some really good.
Oh, amazing.
Really good wide receiver. But it's like the weather half the season is bad. Then you're going to. I guess Denver is kind of cold half this. I don't know. It's like it's kind of bad weather. I mean, there are worse cities to play in weather-wise, but and the offenses have always been just kind of like just – it's always been defensive kind of mentality, you know. So, like you said, this probably is the best – I mean, I'm looking back in the day, it was like Stephon Page and like –
J.J. Burden,
I mean, great guy.
Lake Dawson.
I have Lake Dawson's autograph, but as a matter of fact, a tremendous bust out of Notre Dame as well.
Do you remember one of the most infamous playoff losses ever when Lynn Elliott missed those three field goals? We lost 10-7 to the Colts.
Yes, I do.
Lake Dawson caught the touchdown in that first quarter, and I was like, we're going to crush these dudes. And then that was the only points we had all game.
That was Lake Dawson grabbed that? Guys, Chiefs fans, look up Lake Dawson. You'll see amazing stats. I'd be surprised if he had like four career.
I was going to say amazing?
Yeah, amazing. No Snoop Minnis stats. That's another. That's
oh,
another.
My God.
I actually met a guy who was his cousin. I was like, you're Snoop Minnis' cousin? I was like, he had that Escalade? He's like, that gold Escalade? I'm like, yeah. Or no, it was like a Land Cruiser or something. But he used to drive it around Kansas City all the time. We're talking 2001.
He went to Florida State, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
Of course he did. Why? Who else would get a goddamn gold?
Anytime? He had a great little ACL thing. You know? You just never know. I wanted to bring up the Phillies because right now, what? I don't know. Are you following your beloved Phillies?
Cause I'm shocked.
As you should be. As many predicted them to finish last. I mean, the Braves were going to be horrible.
Oh,
anyway.
Dude, I thought we were going to lose. I thought the Phillies were going to lose at least 100.
You got this guy, Nola. Have you watched him pitch yet?
He's solid. Actually,
I picked him up on my fantasy, and the guy's like, the thing is, he strikes out 8 or 9. I mean, I think he's 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might be like 2-1, ERA like 2-something. I mean,
he pitched really well last night, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, averaging 8-9 strikeouts. I mean, is it new management, just
Here's
like
the thing.
Chemistry, just...
Well, that Cole Hamels trade is going to pay dividends with everyone we got. The Phillies offense is terrible. They're not scoring any runs. They're 16-14. They've lost 3 in a row now. But 16-14 is still pretty incredible. They have all these young pitchers. They have Nola. They have Velasquez, who's...
Amazing as well.
Essentially, kind of... He came from the Astros, but didn't have high expectations. Pretty good.
No, yeah.
And then this other dude, Jared Eckhoff. He's only 1-3, 1-4, but he's actually really good. They just scored no runs when he pitches.
Yeah, it's tough to like truly get an appreciation for young pitching talent when they're on bad teams because most of the time they're getting – and it's not only like – They're getting horrible defense sometimes.
And they have a really good bullpen. They have a closer who's killing it. He's got 9 saves already.
Oh, man, I missed on that.
So, okay. Yeah.
So that's good. Do you go out of your way to see Phillies games, like when they come to on the West Coast at all?
I just don't have time. I mean, I have a good friend who's now coaching on the Marlins, and I guess I didn't even realize they came to L.A. last week, and a buddy of mine went to go see him and got on the field and got a field pass.
Oh, that's...
I'm so out of the loop. I didn't even realize Marlins were coming to town.
You're just like,
because I don't have time. Like, yeah, I love the Phillies, but it's tough. I mean, I want to make a trip to KC this year for the Chiefs. That's for sure.
Yeah, and actually, I was gonna pull up the schedule here, and I do have it, I believe.
Because after going to that playoff game, I'm kind of hooked. I'm like, that was really fun.
I mean, we've got. Let's see.
So back to the draft. So DeMarcus Robinson, I think, is gonna play regardless because you got Chris Conley. Let's hope he steps it up and becomes the receiver they hope he is. Albert Wilson, I think, is what he is, but he's solid. But I think Robinson can really jump in and do some things. So they drafted Kevin Hogan at quarterback. This guy's going to be the guaranteed third stringer. A lot of people think that's all he'll ever be, but you know what? He's from Stanford. He's smart. Good guy to have on a team.
Yeah, not a bad guy. I mean, you know, at least you know he'll know the offense, you know, if he does need to get in to the game, which hopefully he doesn't as a third string, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, again, that's one of the other things in Kansas City is they've got no problem just putting you on the bench and for years, and then, you know, maybe you take a 3-year, $21 million contract and go to Philadelphia
Chase
after
Daniel.
That. Yeah, I mean, God, that is that's just ridiculous. I mean, he's a good quarterback, though.
That's
what
backups are going for now.
That's, I mean, what are starters going? I mean, I guess Alex Smith's getting like 18, isn't he, or something close
What's
to that?
What's his name? Kirk Cousins is getting paid 20-something this year for being a franchise.
Yeah, let's talk about bring up RG3 here for a second. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, he came out, can't miss, on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, a lot of people said, you know, the 6'1", 210 body is not going to hold up in the NFL. And it broke down, you know, almost immediately compared to, like, a Fiat sports car.
Right.
Or something like that.
Smart car.
And so, you know, it's just kind of, is it just... He had the skill, I guess. It was just a matter of health, like staying healthy.
Mentally, too. I'm rooting for him because, honestly, how do you not root for the Browns? They're just perennially just terrible, and I want them to put it all together. They had 14 draft picks in the draft and took 5 wide receivers. So, needless to say, a good chunk of their draft didn't make a lot of sense. But a couple of the receivers they drafted got a lot of talent, and – I really want to see RG3 succeed. I mean, I really hope he does something with the Browns. I feel like they're the right home for him because not many other teams would start him.
But you never know. And it's just – and then somehow – I mean, how brilliant, though. That's like the one smart thing that Washington ever did as far as just dumping money at free agents, you know, over the years. I mean, to draft Cousins the same year. Like,
same year.
I think the second round, wasn't it? Or like the third?
Fourth.
Whatever it was, people were like, what are you doing? And they're like, dude, he's still available. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so the most controversial Chiefs pick was Tyreek Hill.
Yes. Now, is he still on the team? Because I know like everyone was just like up in arms about that.
Well, December 2014, got arrested, pleaded guilty for punching and just doing some domestic awful shit. Apparently, he has dynamic return skills similar to Devin Hester. Whatever. We'll see. I wouldn't have taken him just based off of his history, but hey, maybe he's reformed himself and it was a stupid mistake. Then they took a corner named DJ White out of Georgia Tech.
Well, okay, real quick, like if they take him this year, like why not take Beckham last year? It's the same type of situation, except for that guy's a local guy. I mean, I guess that was a first or second round pick, a little bit higher draft pick than they spent on this guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, he had an all right season last year, but that seemed like a more logical, you know, especially if you're going to draft this guy and go through the same amount of uproar over it. Like, oh, you know, you're just drafting his talent. And then I guess if they cut him, it is what, the sixth round pick, seventh round, you know, they're like, all right, whatever.
If he makes the team, whatever. I mean, the corner that they took a corner.
Who knows?
In the
it could be
round.
Dante Hall. Who,
oh, yeah, you never know. They took some corner in the sixth round. I don't think he'll make the team. They drafted a defensive end, who's only 235 in the sixth round. I don't. He'll be practice squad. And that's pretty much
all she wrote.
That's more or less the draft.
Well, I'm looking at the schedule, and thank you, NFL, for putting the Broncos at Kansas City on Christmas.
No.
But yeah, December 25th.
I didn't even notice that. Wait, Christmas fall on a Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday. Good. What? Nice. And then we got the Titans on the 18th. See, I'd almost recommend, I mean, you can handle the cold, so it's not really, you know, the cold games are fun, but to start off the season, you've got the Chargers on Sunday, September 11th, and then you got the Jets on September 25th, October 23rd, the Saints, and so then you got you don't want to see the Jaguars, you don't want to see Tampa
Actually,
Bay.
Actually, the Jaguars are arguably the most improved team in the league. They had an amazing offseason.
Well, if you do it November 3rd.
I'm actually excited to see what the Jags do. They between free agency and the draft, they probably got 6 to 8 new starters. They legitimately had a great offseason.
Oh, you know what? I think I found our spot. It's this Thursday, December 8th, Raiders.
Oh, that could be a good one.
It's a Thursday. That's why it appeals to me. It's not the Sunday.
We should start looking now to see what place will let us co-headline for a weekend.
Yeah, you know, just like a Friday, Saturday.
Whatever. Then we go to the game on Sunday.
Yeah, no.
Just enough to cover our flights.
Right, or just set up something. Like, I could, you know, just set up our own, like, a venue. Like, I'm doing a one-nighter.
I'll plug the heck out of it all my
podcasts. I'll plug this right now.
I'll
Red Front.
Out.
Red Front in downtown Kansas City.
Saturday,
May 21st.
I also have a friend, former military guy, who lives in Kansas City. And he's like, anytime you come to Kansas City, man, I got a lot of hookups. I'm like, okay.
No, it's great. Like, Jeff Dye was there. He texted me. He's like, what should I do? I'm like, World War One Museum's awesome. Take a tour of Kauffman Stadium's awesome. You know, the food things, of course, but the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is incredible.
And any American history, I'm in.
And they've got some basketball stuff at the Sprint Center, you know, little things like that. But, yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff to do. But, yeah, I mean, if that to me seems – and it's the Raiders, you know.
And the Raiders are – they get better every year.
Yeah, like, you know, Derek Carr is only getting better. And I think they're a legitimate threat. It's hard to say that out loud.
And they took Sean Smith away. I mean, they overpaid him, but they got him.
What about I don't even know if we need to talk about the Sixers. That's just a
– No one wants – I mean, I'm sure your listeners I could talk about the Sixers all day. All I can say is May 17th.
Let's talk about Villanova.
I love Jay Wright. He's a great coach.
I mean,
he earned it.
What is that? I mean, that comes out of nowhere, but it's – because no one ever
– Well, not really. I mean, they were a top 10 team.
It is, but it's like – when I say out of nowhere, it's not UCLA. It's not a state school, you know, in the sense like – when did they win last week?
But Villanova's always had a rich history of basketball.
They have, you know, Big East history. And what year did they win previously? Was that 82 or 80 – no, 85?
Well, that was when they were upset, I think – was it by Georgetown? Let me check.
Yeah, either way, yes, a rich basketball history, but it's Villanova. Like, the only people that are picking Villanova are people, even if they are a one seed, are people on the East Coast. You know, whereas, it's just not what I'm saying is, barely UConn is now, you know, kind of on the blip, and they've won like 3 national championships, you know what I mean? And so, it was just a surprise to me that they ended up winning, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, Villanova won in 85. The lowest seeded team to win the tournament.
Fantastic, you know, and so 30 years later, or I guess 31 years later, you know, does that even read like
pretty amazing?
I guess, is there a large Villanova fan base in Philly? Because I know there's
Villanova's a big school. I used to work at the Chili's on the main line right next to Villanova's campus. I mean, I went to school in West Philly, but the Chili's I worked at was so shitty and all the Penn kids were so cheap.
They would actually go out of their way just to come down to the...
It was terrible. And so one night, the GM from the Villanova one happened to be working at my restaurant, and I was making him laugh all night, just goofing off. And he goes, hey, man, you should come work for me over by Villanova. I go, really? He goes, yeah, man, you'll make way more money. It's worth your ride. I started driving over there a half hour to Villanova because people had money over there. And it was awesome. It was right on the main line, right next to Villanova, so I got to know the area pretty well.
That's hilarious. I've never been to Philly. I mean, what is there to do there aside, and I don't want to say the Rocky thing.
So much history. I mean, there's still some cobblestone streets left from the revolutionary days.
Oh, that's, yeah, I was going to say, you could probably spend a week just going on history museums and tours and things like that.
So much.
Would you recommend any, like, give me three for the listeners at home if you're going to Philly or if you ever go?
Well, you got to go.
Where do you not waste your time? You know, like, that was cool, but, you know, I had more fun over here doing that.
If you want to grab a cheesesteak, go ahead. But honestly, I think they're really overrated. You might want to kill yourself after eating one because they're kind of rough.
It's the cheese. Like, it's just, they are. I've never had an authentic one from Philly, but traditionally it's like Cheese Whiz on there. It's not like shredded.
Well, you can get whatever you want, but if you order a cheesesteak, you got to order a certain way. Say you want a cheesesteak with Cheese Whiz and onions, you got to say one Whiz Wit. That's how you order it.
Okay. One Whiz Wit?
Yeah, or you say one American Wit. No H, just Wit.
Wit, okay.
So Wit means with onions. So you go one American without or one American Wit. That's how they do it.
Okay.
I'll be honest, after my sophomore year, I stopped ordering cheesesteaks. Like, if we would take a late night run to Gino's or Pat's, I would go and hang out or get, like, cheese fries. Because, like, I realized if I ate one of those cheesesteaks, I would be dying the next day.
Like, this will take 2 weeks off my life. Yo, at some level.
They are heavy.
So, if you do a cheesesteak, maybe do it at the end of your trip there. Maybe the last day. Or maybe even do the cliched, I'm wrapping this up and taking it home.
You almost want to do it right at the beginning. Like, knock it out right away. Get the heartburn over. Get the diarrhea done with. Or the constipation. And whatever. I'd say you always want to do it.
But it's worth
right
it.
Away.
I mean.
Yeah. What I would do is I'd go to South Street and go to Lorenzo's Pizza. Lorenzo's has the biggest slices you'll ever see. I love Lorenzo's.
That's where you're gripping it with like two hands and just like.
Dude, a whole pie is two boxes.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. They like pack it together?
Oh, yeah.
Thin crust?
Super thin.
Okay.
I shoved almost an entire pizza in my luggage one time coming back from the holidays.
Man, see, there's a few, like in the Midwest, it's like Mr. Goodsense. It was like they always like bake their bread fresh every day kind of thing and like slice the meat like right there. One of those where you're like, let me get no sides, nothing that's going to make it wet, but like let me just get the main sandwich pretty much undressed to go on. You know, you pick it up on your way to the airport. Amazing. By the time you get home, it's really, you pack it in a little thing, you know, it's only 4 or 5 hours old. Still good.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's better than not having none of it.
Sheesh.
Speaking of, like, good, this beer.
Oh, yeah, what do you think?
I'm 2/3 of the way down, and it's delicious.
Flavor, right?
So, describe this to the listener at home. This is a Johnny LaCosta one-off, or is this going to become a routinely brewed
People
recipe
seem to
here.
Dig it.
It's delicious.
I call it the Apperberry Ale. It's an apricot blueberry IPA. And the thing is, the flavor kind of counteracts. It's not that hoppy, but there's a little bit of hops.
No, right? it is, but I think the flavor kind of masks it slightly. But I could definitely drink four of these.
The color is like super thick. I really like it a lot. I don't know. I'm still a novice. Every time I brew, I pray that it comes out not shitty. But this happened to be, this one came out pretty damn good.
No, how do you get into brewing? Like, do you just go buy a kit or do you go to?
Yeah. Simple. I mean, I've been a beer geek for a long time and, you know, I love trying beers everywhere I go, but I was like, well, if I'm going to like be knowledgeable, I should at least do it myself. And so went out to a place, I bought a 5-gallon kit, all the ingredients. I did my first run. And now I just, you know, now I do it every couple of months. The hardest part is having a 5 to 6 hour time frame to where I like don't have to leave my kitchen. Like usually I'm never home that long.
And that's like the process of like bottling it and just like brewing it.
No, it's the initial process of boiling the water, the grains, all that stuff. Then, you know, the hops. And then initially what you have to do once all that shit's done, then you have your wort. You got to cool the wort down to almost room temperature. That takes a while. Then you got to put it in your primary fermenter. Depending on what kind of beer you have, you let it go in there for a couple of weeks. Then you want to transfer it to a secondary fermenter. But with an IPA, you don't want to transfer to a secondary. So you keep in the primary, and then you could bottle it. So basically you take a siphon from your primary and run it south all the way down to where you hook the spigot. you turn the spigot on, and you bottle your beer. After, of course, you do all the flavoring and shit. So what happens is you have your primary fermenter, you burn all your primary sugars, throw it in the spigot one, add the flavoring, and then you transfer the beer from the primary to the secondary, because the primary has like a lot of the sediment shit.
Right. So is that when the IPA and you do not do the second transfer?
Yeah. You just.
So is that why it has that bitterness, and because you're getting a lot of that? That's
the oxygen keeps the hops, and so you transfer it to the spigot container, and then right away you bottle it. So it actually makes the process a lot quicker. And then you bottle it up, and then the goal is you want to keep it in the bottles for a good 2 weeks, and then you're ready to.
And that lets it settle and
carbonate.
Nice.
So I'm still learning a lot.
Yeah, like, no, I mean for being novice, that's a lot better than stuff I've wasted money on.
It's fun, man. It's really fun, and it's not cheap. I mean, the ingredients for this batch, it made about 2 cases, and it probably costs like $50. So I mean, it's not like you're saving money. It costs.
It's still $1 a beer is not bad.
No,
considering some of these people are charging $8-9 for a 4-pack.
And honestly, like for me, I end up using them as presents. I barely drink any of it. I brew so other people can try it, and then like I feel proud when they say they like it. Like that's cool.
And then also too, like people that know you personally, you know, if they're interested, you're like, hey, you know, it's actually, you can do it. It's if you put in the time and the effort and just do some research and learn what you're doing.
Yeah. My dream is my brother and actually one of his buddies, they almost opened up a brewery. They had a location ready to go, and the owner of the place backed out last minute. So I'm going to keep brewing and get good at it to where eventually someone I know will own a brewery and they'll be like, hey, you want to have your own beer here? I'm like, fuck yeah.
You want to enter this possibly in any contest or anything like that, or wait a little bit longer?
I don't know.
Nothing wrong with competition. I mean, and you're getting a great response.
Beer experts are pretty tough critics, though.
Yeah, I'm sure that they got to be like as snobby or more snobby than wine, especially recently. You know, it's like if you got a judge that comes up and he's got a beard that puts mine to shame, you're like, I'm fucked.
You're done. And yeah. I have no idea what the alcohol content in this is. I really don't know. Like,
I would guess like 5.
Well, the thing is, this IPA is supposed to be 6.5.
But are you sure? I could have sworn I drank a 5.5 IPA.
You can, but I'm saying the ingredients I bought, it's supposed to be 6.5. I just don't know.
Well, then that's what it is, because it doesn't taste like, you know, because the ones that are 8.5, 9, like they're a little bit heavier than that.
Oh, yeah. But so I don't know. I mean, I've never. I guess one night I should try and see how long it takes to get drunk. I don't know.
I would say 4 would be the perfect amount, really.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, after 1, I'm feeling pretty good. But here's the thing I was going to recommend.
As soon as you and I are done recording, I'm passing out.
You're going up to Washington. You got some shows coming up there. We'll plug some stuff quick. And I would recommend. You're going to be in Tacoma. When are the dates on that exactly?
Tacoma Comedy Club in Washington, May 12th, 13th, and 14th. My good friend Rachel Feinstein is headlining, and I'm lucky enough to be hanging out with her all weekend and opening for her. So it's going to be a pretty badass weekend. And also in LA, we're doing a huge charity show at the Comedy Store on Thursday, May 26th. My foundation, Regular Hero. We're raising money, and all the money goes directly to kids and their families from, you know, me, Steve Simone, Brett Ernst. We've gotten really close with a lot of kids at Children's Hospital because we
blood drives
and all that.
Yeah, it's great work you guys do.
It's been good, and so we've already helped out 5 different families financially, and unfortunately the money we've raised, we're out of it because we've given all the money away. And so this show is going to raise more money so we can help out more families. We're also going to get involved at Fountain Valley Regional.
Is there a website someone can go to donate, or is it just...
Yeah, simple, regularhero.org, or hit us up on social media because we're selling tickets. The lineup isn't set. We're very close to getting some major, major
people. I was going to say, with yourself and Steve and Brett involved, I'm sure you guys will have no problem getting, you know, a great lineup together.
We're close.
Especially for a great cause.
Yeah, by next week we should have some major names attached, which will make it less stressful on me.
On everybody, to promote it and be like, no, trust me. Dude, it's going to be good, but...
So hard. I mean, but yeah, we're going to raise a bunch of money, and that way we'll have more money to give back to the kids and their families. We're going to get involved in a hospital in Orange County as well. I think it's Fountain Valley Regional. I just talked to them today, and we're going to maybe do some stuff where... they really need some people to come read to the kids. So some comics might do that.
Nice.
And a lot of comics want to get involved. So we're just trying to do our best to make a difference. And, you know, Regular Hero is an amazing organization, and we jumped on board. And, yeah, so far so good. So
nice. Well, yeah, and you can found – actually, if you just go to J-Lo Comedy, that's JLOComedy.com. That's Johnny's website.
Or at J Quasto, JQUASTO. Yeah, if you're in Washington, come out to the shows. It'll be so fun.
No, it's a great club, Tacoma. I was saying, also, I was going to say the AAA team, the Rainiers, play there for the Mariners. So, you know, maybe sneak in a baseball game. It's not too far from the club as well.
Yeah, I'm down. And, if you like pro wrestling, I got my wrestling podcast. It's called Wrestling Compadre Slamcast. We're at Wrestling Buds on Twitter. And some big news coming up very, very soon on that show. I just can't say anything yet.
Nice. Well, hey, I mean, I appreciate you stopping by and coming on. And, yeah, we'll continue to...
And if you're a Chiefs fan, hit me up on social media because I need more people to talk about the Chiefs.
Yeah, and Reggie, too.
Oh, hit up Reggie.
Reggie Flannery, big time.
Tell him we sent you.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I should probably just have him on. The guy's a great guy.
Dude, he would totally do it. And I'm telling you, it would be the greatest Kansas City Chief podcast you could ever ask for.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk to him.
Let's do it together.
Let's lock down that Raiders weekend. We'll get you in Kansas City. We'll get some shows together. We'll do a Chiefs theme show. I'll call up Lilja and see if we can get some like random Chiefs.
Right, you know him.
Get some Chiefs alumni. Right? Yeah. With the high school.
He seems like the coolest.
He used to beat the shit out of me in football practice all the time.
Why? He's a massive dude.
Well, at the time, what happened is all my best friends played football, and you know, I'm as big as them. I just never played, and so I played my senior year. Never was eligible because my grades were so bad. But when they weren't bad, I played special teams, stuff like that. But in practice, I was a scout team defensive end. And unfortunately, you know, I would go up against him. And then on the opposite side was a guy that started at TCU for like 3 or 4 years. But yeah, it was just brutal. Like, he just shoving me on the ground. At the time, I was like, this is ridiculous.
You know back then that he was NFL talent?
Well, at the time, you know, he was like, I think all Kansas City, you know, like I think as a junior, you know, so he had like some accolades, and I think was on there was this weird thing where he got kicked off the football team his senior year for being at a party and like a weird alcohol like commitment, you pledge not to party thing you sign, now you're off the team kind of thing.
He had a promise ring?
Yeah, exactly. One of those things. So it kind of, he was supposed to go to K-State, and from what I understand, went to community college and then to K-State, and then...
But he never got drafted,
get drafted.
That's amazing.
Right, and so, but was a great player.
And he became a Pro Bowler.
I don't think he actually ever made the Pro Bowl.
I thought he did.
But he managed like 10 or 11 seasons.
He was a hell of a starter and was a major free agent, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a good pickup for the Chiefs, especially, you know, him being from Kansas City. But it was also, like, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it was a just nice, you know, ending. You know, got to retire in Kansas City. You know, there's something good about being able to just drive to your home that's in your hometown, you know, when you get off of work. But yeah, maybe I'll reach out to him and see. Because that would be great, you know, just do some, like, I don't know, Q&A or just maybe Chiefs joke theme show, like where it's just like old
Absolutely.
Chiefs joke stuff
like
that.
I've heard him on what's the main station in Kansas City?
The 610 Sports.
I listen to their app all the time, and I've actually, he's a regular guest.
Yeah, he does like a Monday call-in, I think.
Dude, he's fantastic.
He's been great. We've had him on a few times. He's always been good.
I mark out like crazy for any former Kansas City Chiefs. So I mean, I would love to meet him. That'd be great.
Oh yeah, and I know he's got a charity too, so maybe that's something we could work out, do some fundraising in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell yeah.
On board.
Well, hey, man, thanks again, and we'll have to have you back on here and hopefully get Reggie too. And
can't wait.
When the season starts.
The season is approaching.
Hell yeah, man. All right, man, be good. 20 years in the minor leagues. Ain't no place I didn't go. Well, I got a few. But I never made the show. I could hang on for a few years doing what I'd done before. Won't let that laughing river. Alright, so that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you, John Aquasto. Thank you, the Negro Leagues Museum.
And again, go get the best of Buck O'Neill if you liked what you heard. If you're in Kansas City, you can do that by just going down to the museum, paying the $5 to walk around. It's well worth your time. You want to spend about, I think, 2-3 hours. You can really kind of soak everything in. And then, or you can just go back every couple of years like I do. Also online, you can purchase it. Just Google it. Guys, thanks for listening. At Sportsaholics on Twitter and Instagram. Been putting up pictures of all the travels, everything else. And remember, go to onelovely.com, onelovely.com, for some great one-offs. If you need some shirts made up, they're happy to do it too. Great at doing that. But guys, thanks for listening, and stay obsessed.
Michigan.